Well, so we're moving on now to talk about, aspects of quantum information aside from computation, and we're going to eventually get to thinking about things like, data compression, and we'll talk about some things called entanglement concentration and dilution, and some other sorts of, kind of information processing, but not computational applications. But today I want to also, introduce some kind of mathematical ideas that'll be useful. I want to talk about distance measures, so ways of measuring the distance between quantum states, and also the notion of quantum entropy, and sort of how that's defined and what we know about it and what it's and then we'll see later what it's useful for. Okay, so the idea of distance measures is that if we want to make notions of approximation precise, then we need to have some way of quantifying the distance between quantum states, and we could do this for pure quantum states, and more generally we'll do it for mixed quantum states. So, we've already seen some examples of something you might take as a distance measure, right? So, for example, when we discussed approximate universality, and I guess also when we proved the lower bound for search, we had some measure of the distance between two quantum states, which was just the norm of the difference, right? So before we used a distance measure. Like the distance between psi and phi, so you just take the difference between those two vectors, and you take the norm of that, and then there was an associated distance that you could define on unitary operations, which would be like so you take the max over all quantum states of the difference between u psi and v psi, so this would give you some notion of the distance between u and v. It's kind of an induced distance on u and v. But we didn't really, I mean, I didn't really motivate why we were taking this particular notion of distance. I mean, I guess you can see that certainly if psi and phi are the same thing, it gives you zero, and in some sense, if they get further away, it gets larger. But we did this in kind of an ad hoc way, and there are some things that are maybe not totally desirable about this measure. Like, for example, suppose the two states that we're considering are the state psi and the state minus psi. I mean, those states clearly are physically indistinguishable because they just differ by a global phase. But if I compute this distance between them, psi minus psi, well, that's just like the length of that vector is just this vector is just 2 psi, right? So this is just going to be 2. So this is somehow not desirable that we have two states which are actually, like in some sense, the distance between them should be zero, but the number that you actually get if you take this quantity is maximal. So this wasn't a problem for what we were doing because, for example, when we talked about universality, we actually could approximate things even up to a global phase if you think about what's the unitary operation that you're applying. And we really actually only cared about the case where the measure was small, so we wanted states to be very close to each other. So, it wasn't a problem for anything that we were doing before. But maybe we should take a step back and kind of think about, what's the right, what are really the right sorts of distance measures to take, because this might be something that would show up all over the place. And so, we should study what measures there are and what we can say about them. Okay, so, one way of avoiding this kind of a problem is to take some kind of a distance measure that has an operational interpretation, that has some motivation that, like, there's some task that you could carry out, and that number is quantifying how hard it is to do that task or how well you can do something. So this is going to be sort of a theme of the measures that we're going to talk about, that they're not just going to be mathematical quantities, but they're going to have some kind of operational meaning, that they're the amount of something that you can do. Okay, so the first quantity we're going to talk about is the fidelity. Okay, so the fidelity between two pure quantum states, so if we have two pure quantum states, psi and phi, then the fidelity between psi and phi is just going to be the magnitude of their inner product. So sometimes this is called the overlap between the two states. And this has a, well, it certainly has a clear geometric meaning, right? This is like the cosine of the angle between the two vectors. Well, it's the absolute value of the cosine of the angle between the states, if you think about them as vectors in a vector space. But it also has an operational interpretation, right? We can give some kind of meaning to this, which is Well, suppose we were to try to measure in some basis that had psi as one of its states. So for example, we could try to do the POVM that either projects onto psi. So the POVM that has the two elements that either project onto psi or project onto the orthogonal complement of psi. So this, you could think about this as being like, measuring in a basis that includes the state psi, except you consider all of the outcomes other than psi to be the same. So suppose we do this POVM on the state phi, right? Then what's the probability that we're going to get the psi outcome? Well, I mean, it's exactly the square of the fidelity, right? So this is going to give the outcome labeled by psi. So in other words, you're going to get the outcome corresponding to the POV element that projects onto psi with probability that's just the square of the fidelity. So, well, at least the square of the fidelity has this operational interpretation that there's this thing you can do, and that's the number that it describes. Okay. So we could, now what we would like to do is we would like to, in general, define these distance measures not just on pure states, but on mixed quantum states, right? So we're going to talk about lots of applications where we think about quantum information being stored in general in mixed quantum states, and so we would like all of these measures to be well-defined for mixed states. So there's sort of a natural way to define, if you sort of consider this operational interpretation, there's a natural way to extend this to the case where at least one of the states is mixed and the other state is pure, which would be the following. So like the fidelity between the pure quantum state psi and the mixed quantum state rho, well, let's say the square of that, would be like the corresponding probability, the probability that you would get the psi measurement outcome if you did this POVM and you were in the quantum state rho, right? So that would just be the trace of the projector onto psi times the state rho, or in other words, the psi-psi matrix element of rho. Okay? But more generally, how should we define this quantity if we have two mixed quantum states? Well, I mean, I can tell you how it's defined. It's defined in general as follows. So the fidelity between two states, rho and sigma, is defined to be the trace of the absolute value of the square root of rho times the square root of sigma. Okay, and here, what do I mean by the absolute value of an operator? Well, what I mean here is that, like, the absolute value of A is the square root of A times A dagger. Right, so this is an operator that's going to have, its eigenvalues are going to be, the absolute values of the eigenvalues of A. Okay? So that's what I mean by this. There's another way of writing this thing because, rho and sigma are Hermitian operators. You can write this thing as the trace of the square root of rho times sigma times the square root of rho. So I take this particular operator, I take sigma, I multiply it by the square root of rho on either side, I take the square root of that operator, I sum up the eigenvalues, and that gives me the fidelity. So, why this, right? What does this have to do with the thing that I just described, right? Why is this the natural notion of fidelity when you have states that are mixed? Well, one way of justifying this is through something that's called Ullmann's theorem, which really just says that this is the natural generalization of the overlap to the case where you have mixed states. And it says the following. So the fidelity between rho and sigma, which I've defined just by this algebraic expression, this is exactly what you get if you maximize over all purifications of rho and sigma. Right? So this is the maximum over all psi and phi, where psi is a purification of rho, right, in the sense that we talked about before. It's a pure state on a larger system whose reduced density matrix for one of the subsystems is rho. And phi should be a purification of sigma. And now when we take a purification of a state, that doesn't give us so we take some mixed state and we purify it. There's not a unique way to do that, right? There's some unitary degree of freedom on the environment. And so there's not a unique psi and there's not a unique phi. So what we do is we maximize over all of them. We maximize over all of them the overlap. right? So this is the sense in which this quantum fidelity between some mixed states, rho and sigma, is going to give us the overlap. So, you know, there's an interpretation, which is that this is the closest that the states could be if you think about all the ways of realizing the states as, some pure system where the, you get the right density matrix when you trace out over some environment. Okay, so this is this is the way that the fidelity is defined, and you can see that it has this kind of operational interpretation that is sort of derived from that interpretation for pure quantum states, and then when we have mixed quantum states, you have to think about this thing where you purify the system in order to get back into the pure state picture. Okay. All right. Questions about this? Okay. So,
Why couldn't we just do something like get rid of the overall phase, so take some kind of, essentially, I guess, look at things on the box here, so take some kind of absolute value of the state?
Right.
So that would solve the psi minus minus psi problem.
Right. You could do some optimization over all ways of multiplying one of the states by a phase, something like that. Yeah, you could definitely do something like that. There are lots of ways to define ad hoc distance measures, right? So I guess the point of view that I'm sort of trying to advocate is, we should take some distance measure that's motivated by something, where it has some meaning, that it quantifies how what happens in some way of carrying out some actual process. So we kind of have that for the fidelity. For the next thing that we look at, which will be the trace distance, we'll even have that all the more, that it'll really be something about like how distinguishable the states are. If you just say you want to fix up this problem, yeah, you could do that. But why this and why not weight some of the components by different factors than others? You have to it's good to have sort of like something which is well motivated. Yeah.
And then, for this most general version of the fidelity.
Yeah.
How practical a measure of distance is that? Because it seems like in most cases where we actually are dealing with some mixed state, we'd have at least some idea of what the physical purification was. So is that information that you can put in some way by hand?
Well, if what you have is actually a pure state, if there is some real pure state that actually describes what the system is when you know what the environment, what state the environment is, then you could just use that thing, right? And then maybe instead of optimizing over all purifications, you just take the purification that you know. And then maybe the measure that you care about for your application is just the fidelity between the purifications that you really have. So this, this measure is sort of relevant to the case where the best description you can give is really in terms of a mixed state. Yeah.
Can I follow up to that?
Yeah.
So in the case where you know what your environment is,
right?
So you've got an actual purification.
Right.
That's not necessarily the purification that would maximize that.
That's right. Right.
So what's the motivation for choosing the maximization over the whole purification?
Well, I guess the reason to consider this is where you don't have a particular purification in mind. All you know is that the state is rho. And then it's like you want to know something about, you're taking the largest value because you want to know something about how distinguishable the states are. And this overlap is something which, the bigger the overlap is, the closer the two states are. So this is sort of taking the max here is like looking at the worst case, right? The states could be, because we sort of want to think about distinguishability, right? The sort of tasks that we have in mind are like telling two states apart. So the bigger this quantity is, the harder it is to tell the two states apart. Like, for example, the less information you would get out of that kind of measurement. So that's why we're maximizing it, is to consider the worst case. Yeah. Good. Other questions? All right. So I just want to mention a couple of properties of the fidelity that are maybe useful to know about. If you're working with it, I mentioned these things in part because, if you're, for example, reading papers in quantum information, these are sort of like standard measures, and you'll see them all over the place. And it maybe is useful to know how they behave because, even with an operational motivation, there may be something a bit ad hoc about choosing one measure or another. But you may find that some paper does some analysis in terms of the fidelity, and so you just need to know what it is. So here are some properties that this thing has. It goes between 0 and 1, so the fidelity is always positive. and the furthest, well, the largest it can be is 1. And, you know, I guess from the name, you should have this idea that the fidelity, you know, if the fidelity is bigger, that means the states are closer. You know, rho and sigma are closer to each other if they have higher fidelity. So two states that are very distinguishable should have 0 fidelity, and two states that are indistinguishable from each other is 1, should have the fidelity 1. Okay, and then what can you say about when the states have 0 fidelity? Well, the fidelity between two states, rho and sigma, is going to be 0 if and only if the two states have orthogonal support. So they're supported on orthogonal subspaces. And if that's the case, of course, you can distinguish the states perfectly because you can perform a measurement that tells you, you know, which of those two subspaces you're in, and that allows you to perfectly distinguish the states. And yeah, so that's the case where the fidelity is 0. Something else is true that's true is that the fidelity is unitarily invariant. So if you just perform a change in basis, that doesn't change the fidelity between the states. And that's a nice property to have because it really says that the fidelity is, you know, again, some kind of measure of how far apart the states are, which is something that shouldn't be changed if you apply a unitary transformation. So u rho u dagger, u sigma u dagger, is the same thing as the fidelity of rho and sigma. So this is for all unitaries u. And something else that you could try to do is, more generally, just apply some quantum operation to the states. So suppose you apply some quantum operation to the states. Then that's not necessarily going to be something that keeps the fidelity of the same. Because, for example, it's a legitimate quantum operation to, you know, discard the input state and just output some fixed state. Right, so it's a well-defined quantum operation that, say, just throws away the input and always outputs the zero state, or always outputs the maximally mixed state, or, you know, some fixed state that just doesn't is going to be the same thing if you're in the, if you were originally given rho or originally given sigma. So it's certainly possible to you know, to decrease the to increase the fidelity. You have to get this thing going in the right direction, right? So it's possible to make the states more similar, in other words, less distinguishable, by applying a quantum operation. But it's, what's not possible is to go the other way. So there's sort of what's sometimes called like a data processing inequality. You can't make states more distinguishable by applying some quantum operation. So the fidelity between E of rho and E of sigma is always at least as big as the fidelity between rho and sigma. Right? So this is for all quantum operations E. Right? So for any completely positive trace preserving map. And so, you know, I'm not going to prove this, but you can read about this, more about this in Nielsen and Chuang, and there's a nice discussion also of, you know, many other properties of the fidelity. If you look there. Okay. And there's also a notion of fidelity between probability distributions that you don't see used too much, but you do see it sometimes, and you know, this is sometimes a useful way to think about things. So there is actually a notion of classical fidelity, which is, of course, what you just get if you take two density matrices that are diagonal in the same basis. So the fidelity between two probability distributions, P and Q, is just the, you know, the sum over I of root PI QI. So this is some kind of measure of distance between probability distributions that's 1 if the two distributions are the same. You know, it's going to be 0 if the two distributions have disjoint support, so you'll never get the same outcome under samples from the two distributions. And it's, you know, some kind of classical measure that you might use. And something that you can see, and this again you can think of as sort of an operational interpretation of what the quantum fidelity is, at least in terms of this classical fidelity, is the following thing. So the fidelity between rho and sigma is actually the minimum over all probability over all POVMs. So it's the minimum over all POVMs with elements E sub I of the fidelity between P and Q, where P is the distribution that you see if you measure the state rho with this POVM, and Q is the distribution you see if you measure the state sigma with this POVM. So where PI is the trace of EI rho, and QI is the trace of EI sigma. And here, why are we taking a minimum, whereas before we were taking a maximum? Well, you know, now the idea is that the states are fixed, so it's not like we're trying to take the worst case purification. we're trying to choose the best measurement to distinguish them, right? So of course, there's some measurement that doesn't distinguish them very well if you just measure them very badly. But you know, the fidelity between these two mixed quantum states is like the best fidelity of the measurement outcomes you would get with the best measurement that you might possibly do to distinguish them. Okay. All right, good. So that's it for fidelity. And the next thing that I want to talk about is another distance measure, which is what's called the trace distance. And I have to say, like, if I had to pick favorites, I like this one better. This is somehow a more nicely motivated measure of the distance between quantum states. This is a distance between rho and sigma. This thing is actually, as we'll see later on, this is actually a metric. So it's actually kind of reasonable to use this name, trace distance. And what is this? This is a half of the trace of the absolute value of rho minus sigma. Right? So in other words, you take the difference between the two states, rho and sigma. You take the absolute values of all the eigenvalues. You sum them up, and you divide by 2. Okay, so this is, you know, this absolute value of an operator is the same thing that was defined before. But here you can just imagine that you just take the absolute value of these, take the absolute values of the eigenvalues and you sum those up. Okay. Now this is a classical analog also of a classical quantity that you know you really actually see all over the place, which is something that's called the total variation distance. So here's the classical analog. The total variation distance, or I mean, it's basically just like the L1 distance, which is the following. So the distance between two probability distributions P and Q is there's this factor of a half, which you know makes the maximal distance 1 for probability distributions, but it's a half times the sum over I of the absolute value of PI minus QI. So it's like you take all of the differences between the probabilities of the individual events, and you add them up, and you divide by 2. Right? And that gives you a distance between P and Q. OK, so this measure of distance has a really nice operational interpretation, which is that it has to do with the probability that you can guess whether the state that you're given is rho or sigma. Right? So you can imagine a sort of a game where somebody is going to give you one quantum state. And you know that the state they'll give you is either rho or sigma, and you want to guess with a probability as large as possible, which state you got. And let's say they give you rho with probability half, they give you sigma with probability half, and you want to maximize the probability that you can guess whether the state was rho or sigma. So the maximum guessing probability will actually be a half of 1 plus the trace distance. That's something that you can show. Similarly, if somebody gives you two probability distributions, well, they give you a sample from one of two probability distributions. They either give you a sample from P or they give you a sample from Q, and you want to figure out whether they were sampling from the distribution P or the distribution Q. The best probability that you can guess things correctly is the maximum guessing probability is going to be a half. 1 plus the trace distance, or the total variation distance. So let me write this in the classical case, but the same thing is true in the quantum case. So that's not a hard thing to show. Maybe we can just show it. So let's just consider the case where you have two outcomes. So suppose you have two distributions. One of them has the outcomes with probability P and 1 minus P, and the other has distributions with probability, has outcomes with probability Q and 1 minus Q. What's the distance between these two distributions? Well, the distance is a half of P minus Q plus 1 minus P minus 1 minus Q. Right, so this is just the absolute value of P minus Q. And what's the probability that you can guess correctly with the optimal strategy? Well, what's the optimal strategy for distinguishing these two distributions? Right, let's say that that P is bigger than Q, right? What should you do to try to distinguish them?
Get the outcome corresponding to the first probability, you should probably choose P.
Right, exactly, right. So, I mean, you could also consider like mixed strategies where you guess with some probability, but that's always going to be worse. The best thing to do is always going to be, if P is bigger than Q, if you get the first outcome, you should guess that this was the distribution you had, right? And on the other hand, if you get the second outcome, and then, you know, if P was bigger than Q, then 1 minus Q is bigger than 1 minus P. So if you get the second outcome, you should guess that it was the second distribution, right? So what's the probability of guessing correctly with the best strategy? There's a probability half that you got what you were given was the first distribution, and then the probability that you would get the outcome that would cause you to give the correct answer in that case is P. And then there's a probability half you would be given the second distribution, and the probability that you would get the outcome that would cause you to be correct in that case is 1 minus Q. Right? So so this is a half of 1 plus P minus Q. Right, and we were considering the case where P was bigger than Q. So, like, kind of the, this is for P bigger than Q. Right? So this is how you see, at least in this case, that the total variation distance, if you take the, a half of 1 plus the total variation distance between the two distributions, that gives you the largest possible probability of guessing correctly whether you had one distribution over the other. And if you have more possible outcomes, it's just a generalization of this in kind of the natural way that, like, for any particular coordinate of the distribution, for any particular outcome that you might get, you should always guess the thing that gives you the larger probability. And if you do that analysis, what you'll see is that this is exactly the probability that you can guess correctly which distribution you were given. Right? So that's the sense in which the total variation distance is connected to the probability of guessing whether you were given one or the other of two distributions. And the trace distance is really the quantum analog of that. So it's the if somebody gives you either the state rho or they give you the state sigma, this sort of expression where here you put the trace distance between the quantum states, so a half of 1 plus this, is going to give you the highest possible probability of correctly guessing whether you were given rho or sigma. All right, so that's the operational interpretation of the trace distance, that is that it tells you something about pairwise distinguishability between quantum states. So I actually want to prove that. So this is kind of nice. This is a theorem which is due to Hellstrom. I mean, this is actually from the 1970s, well before people were thinking about quantum computing. So what this theorem says is that it's kind of like the analog of this, Ullman's theorem. So it says that this fact about the classical fidelity that it was this optimization over P of the M's. So what Hellstrom's theorem says is that the distance between rho and sigma, the trace distance between rho and sigma, is what you get if you maximize. So now if things are more distinguishable, the trace distance is bigger. So now we want to maximize over P of EMs of the distance between the associated classical probability distributions, the total variation distance between them, right? So where, again, PI is the probability that you would get the outcome I if you had the state rho, and QI is the probability that you would get the outcome I if you had the state sigma. Okay, so in other words, Hellstrom's theorem says that if you choose the best possible measurement to distinguish the states, then the quantum trace distance, the quantum trace distance will just be the best possible classical total variation distance. And so that is going to say then that the best quantum guessing probability would result from taking the best possible the best possible measurement to distinguish the states in that sense, and then computing the quantum trace distance and plugging that into this expression. Right. So this really says that there's going to be There's going to be some, this is really going to tell us what is the measurement that's going to distinguish these states as well as possible. Because actually the way we'll prove this will be to give both an upper bound on the trace distance, and then also to show that's achievable, and we'll see what is the measurement that actually achieves this. And maybe you've seen this before. Do you know about this Hellstrom measurement, the thing that distinguishes states as well as possible? Aggie's saying no, saying yes, and other people are saying no. Yeah, okay, so maybe it's good that we're looking at it again. Yeah, okay. All right, good. So, but we're going to see not just what is the measurement that does as well as possible, but we're actually going to prove that measurement does is the thing which we'll do as well as you could possibly do. Okay, so we want to prove that these two quantities are equal. So we're going to prove separately, we're going to prove inequalities in the two directions. The lower bound will be easy because we'll just give some strategy that achieves this. We'll just pick some POVM that achieves this. But maybe what we can do first is prove an upper bound. Okay, so what we're going to do is we're going to consider an arbitrary POVM that has elements E sub I, and then P sub I and Q sub I are going to be defined like this. And now what we should do is try to upper bound the distance, right? So we want to show that this is at most something, some particular expression. So we're looking at the distance between P and Q. The distance between P and Q, where we pick some arbitrary POVM, and we want to show that no matter what POVM we take, this is at most the trace distance between rho and sigma. Okay, so what is this thing? How is this thing defined? This is just a half of the sum over I of the absolute value of the trace of E sub I times rho minus sigma. Right, because it's a half of the sum over I of the, it's a half of the, so we're computing the, the classical quantity, right? So the total variation distance between the probability distributions we get under these two, measurements, performing this measurement on these two different quantum states. So we take a half the sum over I of the absolute value of the difference between the probabilities. The probabilities are just the trace of E sub I times rho, or the trace of E sub I times sigma, and the trace is linear, right? So if we take P sub I minus Q sub I, we can just pull the two expressions under the same trace, right? We just take the absolute value of that, we sum that up over I, multiply by a half, and that's the trace distance. Okay. So now what I'm going to do is I'm going to say, I have these matrices rho and sigma. But I'm going to rewrite the difference rho minus sigma in a slightly different way. So let's say we're going to let rho minus sigma be equal to P minus Q for some matrices P and Q. But we demand that P and Q are positive semi-definite, right? So So we take rho minus sigma, and we're going to write it as the difference of two positive semi-definite matrices. Right. Okay. So now this is just the same thing as a half the sum of the absolute value of the trace of E sub I times P minus Q. Okay. And now this is certainly at most, just by the triangle inequality, this is at most a half the sum of the trace of E sub I times P, absolute value, plus the absolute value of the trace of E sub I times Q. Okay? So this whole thing is inside the sum. And now what I can do here, because P and Q are positive semi-definite matrices. Actually, I can put, I can just say that this whole thing is just a half of the sum of the trace of E sub I times P plus Q. Okay? Because everything is actually positive, so I don't actually need these absolute values. And so what is this? So this is a half of just the trace of P plus Q, right? Because what do I get when I sum over I isabai, taking this, you know, using linearity and taking this thing inside the trace, that just gives me the identity, because to be a POVM, the sum of your POVM elements has to be one. So this is a half of the trace of P plus Q. But now, what is this? Well, this is the same thing as a half the trace of the absolute value of rho minus sigma, right? Because you know, these things are positive semi-definite. I guess the other thing that I should have said here, sorry. I mean, I take these things to be positive semi-definite and to have disjoint support, right? Right. So in other words, I mean, what I'm doing here, I mean, of course, rho is already positive semi-definite, and sigma is already positive semi-definite. But what I can do is I can take this whole operator, and I can sort of diagonalize it and take the parts that have positive eigenvalues and put them into P, and the parts that have negative eigenvalues and put them into Q. Right. So I can always do this in such a way that P and Q have disjoint support. And so, you know, when I do that, in general, P won't be the same thing as rho, and Q won't be the same thing as sigma. P is just like the positive part of the difference, and Q is the negative part of the difference, with a minus sign in front of it. And so when I do that, when these things have disjoint support, you know, that sort of is going to justify this step, that if I want to take the trace of P plus Q, that's going to be the same thing as taking the trace of the absolute value of rho minus sigma. Because what taking this absolute value does is it flips the sign of everything that's in the that's in Q, right? Q is sort of the negative part of the operator rho minus sigma. So when I have P plus Q here, that's just flipping the sign of the negative part. That's exactly the same thing that I get if I take the trace of the absolute value, right? Okay, but this is just the trace distance between rho and sigma. Okay, so that shows that. That shows that if I no matter what POVM I take, the total variation distance between the probability distributions that I get when I make those two measurements can be at most the trace distance between the states rho and sigma, right? So that gives me kind of one direction of the inequality that I want, and the other direction that I want is to show that there exists some specific POVM that will actually allow me to achieve this value, so that there exists some POVM I can do on the quantum states, so I actually get the trace distance as my total variation distance between probability distributions. And this is using a measurement, which is sometimes called the Hellstrom measurement. And you actually can see what the measurement should be if you look at what we did in this upper bound on the total variation distance. Right, so that's the last thing we want to see, is that this is achievable. And the way that you do that is we're going to take the following POVM. It's going to have two elements. There's going to be one that corresponds to guessing that the answer is that the state was rho, and one that corresponds to guessing that the state was sigma. And they will be the following. So E sub 0 is just going to be the projection onto the support of P, right? So E sub 0 is the projection onto the positive part of the operator rho minus sigma, right? So rho minus sigma is some matrix. It has some positive eigenvalues, some negative eigenvalues. I guess it could also have some zero eigenvalues, but where you put those is not going to matter, because you'll never get an outcome corresponding to those. So you take all the, let's say non-negative, parts of rho minus sigma, the piece of the space on which rho minus sigma is non-negative, and you take the projection onto that. So it's really just the projection onto the support of P. And we're going to take E sub 1 to be I guess we can just say 1 minus that. I mean, we could also say it's the projection under the support of Q, but I guess there's this issue that you could have some zero eigenvalues, and to get a POVM, you have to put them somewhere. You'll never get an outcome corresponding to those, so it doesn't really matter, but just to make sure that everything is well-defined, let's just say we take the identity minus pi sub p. Okay, so we take the POVM that has these two elements. This is clearly a POVM, because the projection onto a subspace is a positive semi-definite operator, and clearly they sum up to the identity just because of the way we chose them. And then, you know, what we want to see is that the total variation distance between the distributions that we get when we measure with this POVM on the two quantum states, that this will give us exactly the trace distance, right? So what is the trace distance between the two states? Well, we already saw, you know, over there that you can write the trace distance as a half the trace of p plus q. So let's see that we get the same thing when we compute the total variation distance. So the TVD between p and q is the following. So we're just going to do the same kind of thing that we did over here, right? So it's a half times, so with probability a half, we're given rho. And then we have to multiply that by the conditional probability that we get the outcome E sub 0 given that the state was actually rho, right? So it's this times, the trace of pi sub p times the state rho. What do I have here? I have written here p minus q. Okay. So it certainly should be this. It should be the trace of pi sub p times rho plus the trace of 1 minus pi sub p times sigma. And now I want to rewrite this in terms of p and q. OK, so I mean, I think this should be the same thing as a half the trace of pi sub p times p minus q plus the trace of, the identity minus pi sub p also times p minus q. Why is that? See what's going on. So, pardon?
What's that?
So, maybe so. Yeah, so I'm just not sure actually. So maybe I just shouldn't write this. I mean, I don't actually see. This is what I have written in my notes, but I don't actually see why it's equal to that. So maybe we should just continue from here, right? So this is a half. We certainly have the trace of pi sub p times rho minus sigma if we take together the terms that the terms that involve rho and sigma. So that's going to be certainly the same thing as p minus q. And then the other term is just the trace of sigma, right? Well, OK, this is just going to give us 1. And this is the same thing as p minus q. No, but I. Get p plus q. Oh, I see. So this is just, I see. When I do this, I mean, P is going to be the projection onto the support of P, and P and Q have orthogonal support, right? So if I just multiply this times, multiply pi sum P times Q, right, I'm going to get 0. Or at least when I take the trace of that, I'm going to get 0. So this is going to be the same thing as the trace of pi sub P times P. So in other words, I'm just going to get the trace of P, right? So this is going to give me half of 1 plus the trace of P. And I guess I know, I'm doing this in a completely different way than I have it in my notes. But somehow I know, you know, what do I know about the relationship between the trace of P and the trace of Q? Right, the trace of rho minus sigma is equal to 0, right? Because you know, rho and sigma are both trace one operators. So you know, the trace of P actually is equal to the trace of Q, right? So you know, this is going to be the same thing as a half of 1 plus. Get the trace of P plus Q. Feel free to jump in if you see what's going on. Did I make a mistake here? So are these two expressions just equal and I don't see it, or are they, no, they don't seem to be, huh? Pardon? Right, yeah. So, yeah, I don't know. So, you know, so this shows that what I really should get is just the trace of P, right? So what I want here, so somehow I made some mistake. I'm really just not sure what's going on. I'm sorry about this. I mean, I guess maybe we should just. Well, so what is this? This is the probability. So, you know, if you what you've got is the state rho, what's the probability that you get the outcome that you're going, that's going to cause you to guess that the state was rho? You know, it's the probability that you get this, that you project onto this piece of the space, right? So you've got rho. And this is the, you know, conditional probability that you measure this outcome when the state was rho. And then over here, you know, this is the conditional probability that you guess that the state was sigma, so that you get the other outcome, you know, when the state that you had was actually sigma, right? And you get rho with probability half, you get sigma with probability half. And so I think this is really the right expression. Well, yeah, because that's the, those are the probabilities with which you're given the two states in this setup. I mean, I actually just have something completely different written in my notes, but I don't know why I have that written in my notes. Let's just go on, and I'll figure this out and I'll explain this next time. You know, I'm sorry for the mix up. Okay, so so if you do this correctly, then what you see is that that you can actually achieve this using this measurement, and that's going to prove this, that actually these two expressions and the two sides are the same, and so there's some measurement which is going to be this measurement where you project onto the support of the positive part of the matrix, and that's going to give you that's what you're going to use to guess one outcome or the other, and that's going to be the optimal measurement. Okay, so that's you know, going to tell you what the best measurement is that you should do in order to distinguish these two quantum states. Okay, so this trace distance also has some nice properties. So it's also bounded between 0 and 1, but it sort of goes the other way. That, you know, the things are as distinguishable as possible when the distance is larger. So the trace distance is going to be zero, like if and only if you can distinguish the states perfectly. It's going to be zero if and only if you can't distinguish the states at all because the two states are the same. So the distance between rho and sigma is actually going to be zero if and only if rho is equal to sigma. And also, it's going to satisfy a triangle inequality. So the distance between rho and tau is at most the distance between rho and sigma plus the distance between sigma and tau. Right? So these properties together actually show that the trace distance is a metric, which is not the case for the fidelity. And I mean, even flipping things around, like 1 minus the fidelity is not a metric. And you can also show that it has similar properties under processing. So if you do unitaries, it doesn't change the trace distance. And if you do a quantum operation, that can't increase the distinguishability. But for the trace distance, that means that the inequality goes the other way. So the distance between E of rho and E of sigma is at most the distance between rho and sigma. So in other words, you can only make the distance between the states smaller by applying some processing that's allowed by quantum mechanics. But this quantity in general is just a different thing than the fidelity. It has a different operational meaning. But you can give some inequalities that show that it's not too far away from the fidelity in a certain sense. And sometimes this is useful if you want to convert between these two quantities. So you can show that if you take 1 minus the fidelity between two quantum states, that's always less than or equal to the trace distance between the two states. And you have an upper bound if you put in a square root and a square. Right? So for fidelities that are really close to 1 and trace distances that are small, these two things are close. So if you're talking about really trying to show that two quantum states are close to each other, these two measures are going to be basically equivalent. Okay. So the last thing that I wanted to do was to introduce the von Neumann entropy. I don't think we're going to have time to really do it in all detail, but I wanted to maybe at least get started. Okay. So are there any other questions, though, about the trace distance before we move on, other than how you fix this proof? Yes?
Do you know why people tend to use fidelity a lot more than at least in experimental things?
No, I don't know why. I don't know. I mean, I think... Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you certainly see both of these measures appearing. I would guess it's maybe historical accident or something like that. Like, I don't know a reason to really prefer that. It's still only one number that tells you something about how far apart the states are. I guess if you have to pick one number, you know, you just pick something and that's what you use. But, you know, the trace distance is an equally good measure of, how far apart the states are. That has a lot of, a lot of nice properties. In some sense, it has nicer properties because it satisfies this triangle inequality.
Is it easy to determine that? Because you can actually measure the fidelity.
No, so like...
You can do experiments so that you give it fidelity.
Yeah, but so typically I see it like when people are preparing a state in the lab and then they want to say, I've created a state with so-and-so fidelity.
Right.
I never see people using trace distance in that sense. So is it easier to calculate?
Let's like look at the expression, right? So if you want to calculate the fidelity, there's just, if you know what the matrices are at least, like if you've done tomography or something like that, you can just, perform this and you can calculate it. But I mean, the trace distance is about as difficult, right? Because it's, you just have to take the difference of the operators, you take the absolute values of the eigenvalues, you sum them up. It's the same kinds of calculations that you would have to do. So I don't think it's particularly easier to calculate one or the other. Yeah, I don't know. I think it's just, people got in the habit of doing that. Okay. So maybe I'll just kind of in 5 minutes, I'll introduce, what the von Neumann entropy is, and then we'll talk a little bit more about its properties next time. And next time we're also going to talk about quantum data compression. Okay, so this is going to be some other kind of number that tells you something about a quantum state, But this is not going to be a distance between two quantum states. It's it's some kind of measure of how much uncertainty there is in a quantum state. That's maybe one way of thinking about it. And it's, again, a quantum analog of a classical quantity, which is what's called the Shannon entropy. So the Shannon entropy is a measure of how much uncertainty there is in a probability distribution. And again, it has, you know, there are operational interpretations for what it's saying in terms of how much there uncertainty there is in a probability distribution quantitatively. Okay, so how is it defined? So the Shannon entropy, which is usually written with the symbol H, of some probability distribution P, it has probabilities of the outcomes P sub I, is the sum over I of P sub I log 1 over P sub I. So it's the average under the probability distribution of the logarithms of 1 over the probabilities. Or sometimes this is written as minus the sum of P sub I log P sub I. But it's a positive quantity, right? Because log 1 over P sub I is a positive thing because, P sub I is a number less than 1. And this logarithm is normally taken to be in the base 2. So when I just write log, I mean the log base 2, you could write explicitly log base 2, and then what you're doing is you're measuring the entropy in bits, right? So this is the entropy in bits. It's the number of bits of information in the probability distribution. You could, of course, use other bases, kind of the most standard thing is to measure the entropy in terms of the bits, where you take the logarithm in base 2. And so, for example, you could ask, how much uncertainty is there in a fair coin flip? And you would expect that there's one bit of information, right? Because you sort of know nothing about the value beforehand. You have no way of, making any sort of intelligent guess of whether it's going to come up heads or tails. And then once you learn how the coin came up, you learn one bit of information. So you should guess that a fair coin should have one bit of entropy. So let's see that that's the case. So the entropy of the probability distribution, a half is, so what is that? So it's a half times the log of, 2, right, because it's 1 over a half, plus a half times the log of 2 for the other outcome. And the log of 2 is 1 because we're taking our logs base 2, and so this is just equal to 1. Right? So we say there's one bit of entropy in a fair coin toss. So this quantity actually has a lot of operational interpretations. For example, it has something to do with the compressibility of a source of information. If you have an information source where the probabilities of the different possible signals that you might see is given by some probability distribution P, then the rate at which you can compress that information is exactly the Shannon entropy of the source. And so we're going to see this in detail next time. And we'll also see the quantum analog of it. So we can define from this a quantum analog, which is what's called the von Neumann entropy. Which is just the trace, minus the trace of rho log rho. And this is usually written S of rho. So this is minus the trace of rho log rho, where again we think about taking the logarithm in the base 2. And this is just the log of an operator. So you diagonalize the thing, you take the logs of all of the eigenvalues. So basically you sum up. Basically you just do exactly this, but you do this where the P sub I's are the eigenvalues of the density matrix. So this is some kind of measure of how much uncertainty there is in this quantum state, in the same sense that the Shannon entropy measures the uncertainty in a probability distribution. Shannon entropy. And what we'll see is that it has many of the same operational interpretations. For example, if you're given a source of quantum states and they're described by a density matrix rho, then S of rho is exactly how much you can compress that quantum source. Okay, so I guess we should stop there. So we'll talk a little bit more about entropy next time. I'll figure out what I did wrong with the Hellstrom measurement and tell you about that. And then we'll go on and we'll talk about compressing quantum sources.